Hey, Dad.
What's up, Logan?
What do you call a preacher's dessert?
I don't know.
A shepherd's pie.
Go fuck yourself.
You're listening to The Wayward Willis with John and Logan, where two atheists discuss religion, culture, and maybe some politics. If you're offended by blasphemy, profanity, or you hate fun, this podcast may not be right for you. And now, on to the show.
Hey, you.
It's us.
Two incredibly smelly cats. What are they feeding us?
Smelly cat, smelly cat.
Okay.
I'm John, and I'm not the host I would have been 20 years ago.
And I'm Logan, the hero that Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now.
This week, we're walking away from everything our mommies and daddies taught us because we've outgrown our invisible friends. We're talking about deconversion.
So, what even is deconversion?
Well, the dictionary defines deconversion as the loss of faith in a given religion and return to a previously held religious or non-religious stance. I feel like we have a pretty good run of related topics going, since heresy and ex-clergy membership leads us right into my life story.
As if anyone wants to hear that.
They don't. But I'm going to tell them anyway. Given that God belief isn't a default position from birth, it's often said that we're all born atheists. So, when someone starts believing in gods, either because they were told to or because they read too many Thor comics, it's called converting.
Oh shit. Setting aside the Norse mythology for a second, is there a superhero religion? Because I need to get in on that shit.
I don't think so, but there is the Jedi Temple.
Oh.
Get on it.
That's like second best. I'll take it.
And now they've got you right where they want you, my little chickadee.
Fuck.
Religions can take your time, your money, and your foreskin.
But they will never take our freedom!
Don't be so sure of that. If they can make you believe in invisible people, they might also be able to make you believe you don't really need freedom.
Why do you have to ruin everything? I'm going to start calling you Adam.
I want to be Steve.
No, you're going to be Adam, because Adam ruins everything.
Oh, I just got the joke.
You're a baddie.
And that's the thing that a lot of people start figuring out with their religion, is that subscribing to the dogma of a church is like being held captive. Your ideas start looking a lot like you got them from someone else. Your words and actions are less like your individual identity and more like a hive mind. And you may start tweeting that everything you don't like is fake news.
Which is actually true if you're watching Fox News reporting on a duffel blog post.
What is a duffel blog?
It's like a farcical news source, and Fox News actually, like, legitimately reported on a duffel blog post about how the military was secretly enlisting people to start taking away guns from Americans.
Wow. So it's like CNN sharing an Onion article.
Basically, yeah.
Nice. So I'm being facetious, obviously, but some people over time do start to realize that the ideologies of their religions don't really represent how they feel about other people and the world. This can happen in some sudden realization or very slowly over time, especially if that person starts to interact with people from different backgrounds, cultures, and religions.
What do you mean Facebook is banned in China? How are you people still alive over there?
You're usually taught the whole us versus them mentality from a really young age, which makes you automatically distrust anyone who isn't like you and who you haven't personally met. This is especially heightened in cult settings and insular communities like the Amish and Magic the Gathering nerds. Once you realize life isn't a TCG, you can GTFO and meet other people IRL.
Hey, F you, man.
I was raised in a Christian family who placed a lot of importance on church attendance and Bible memorization.
Everybody knows that God hates you if you can't regurgitate John 3:16.
Like I said two episodes ago, the oft-repeated phrase in our household was, "You don't have to go to church, you get to go to church." Boy, did we go to church. I was there twice every Sunday, every Wednesday night. Occasional brotherhood breakfasts where the men all got together to eat pancakes and bacon and talk about how cool Jesus is. And every single holiday. During the summers, we'd go to Bible camp, and when that was over, we'd have vacation Bible school for a week.
That's all nothing compared to how often I go to my place of worship. It's called the gym, bitch. My body is a temple.
You are a goddamn liar. You haven't seen the inside of a gym, like, for your whole life.
That's not true, but you're not wrong.
Your whole adult life.
That's also not true. In fact, my adult life is the only time I've ever seen a gym.
Fair enough.
And somebody was forcing me to go to it.
All of this is to keep reinforcing the idea that the church is really all you need in life. But man, is it a drag when you get into middle school and you want to start hanging out with friends on the weekend instead of sitting on a bench listening to some old dude drone on about something you never hear because all you can think about is how great the weather is and how much you'd like to be doing anything else.
Wow. Maybe this is why you fell out of religion, because you just didn't give a fuck, you piece of crap.
The weather was nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. So when you ask your parents if you really have to go to church, you get shamed into thinking it's a privilege.
It's white privilege.
It actually is not too far from the truth. So my parents started talking Jesus talk to me when I was an infant. And by the time I was 4 years old and getting ready to go into kindergarten, I knew that I was a horrible sinner destined for an eternity of agony and terror in hell.
Whoa.
You know, just a happy bedtime story.
Flat Stanley, eat your heart out.
Any loving parent would scare the shit out of their toddler, right? I don't remember much about my childhood, but I do remember the day I accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior.
Ironically enough, that was the same day that the first Diplodocus fossils were discovered.
Yeah, we get it. I'm old. Wasn't that a while ago?
Yeah, it was 1877, you grandpa.
Fuck. You. So, back to my story. It was an evening service, and everyone was singing, and the pastor was telling everyone they'd better let Jesus into their hearts, because if they died that night, they'd want to know that they were going to ride the express elevator to heaven.
I thought it was a stairway.
So, I, a four-year-old, secured my place in paradise by breaking down into hysterical tears and speaking a magic incantation with my dad, begging Jesus to save me.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yay. I hear that the angels in heaven do a slow clap every time a soul is saved.
But like the evil Joker kind.
Yes, exactly like that. Like, we got him. From that point until about fourth grade, I don't have too many memories.
Because of the Alzheimer's, right?
Okay, I'm old! But around that time, I do remember being part of a giant church with tons of kids programs. This time in my life was an upswing in my Jesusness, and like we talked about in the indoctrination episode, it's because the church spent massive amounts of resources to keep kids engaged. You have to get them while they're young.
Isn't that the Catholic Church's slogan?
Brutal.
Keck.
My family moved to Alaska in the middle of my fifth grade year, and I wasn't all that happy about it. We ended up attending this tiny little Southern Baptist church in a log cabin with a boring old pastor.
Was his name Martin Luther?
What?
You know, it's another old person joke.
Oh, then in that case, fuck you. It was around this time that I stopped caring about Jesus as much and hating getting up on Sundays to go to church. That didn't matter, though. I didn't get the choice of going or sleeping in. As everyone knows, the way you get a child to love something is to force them to do it against their will.
Isn't that the Catholic Church's backup slogan?
That's gonna leave a mark. When I got into high school, something happened to my brain, and I rededicated myself to Jesus, vowing to be the best damn Christian I could.
The very best? Like no one ever was?
Well, if you just try hard enough, things will work out, won't they? So, yeah. I got super Jesus-y during high school and stopped complaining about going to church. My parents decided that, as a family, we'd participate in the Read the Bible in a Year program, which broke the entire Old and New Testaments into 365 blocks of verses to read and discuss. It was brutal. Some books of the Bible are not meant to be read.
Just some of them?
Most of them?
Most of them?
All of them?
Yeah.
Do not read the Bible.
Check.
Okay. They're just kind of filler to fluff the total page count. But this is where the first cracks in the dam started to form. One of my favorite quotes is, "The best way to become an atheist is to read the Bible." And for me, that was mostly true. It's difficult to hold on to a view of God as loving and just when he's constantly murdering people and making a big deal out of the wrong things.
Slavery?
Fine.
Shellfish?
How dare you!
Oh.
Nevertheless, I persisted. This is a borrowed slogan. Shortly after that, I participated in a weekly Experiencing God class with a big workbook that was supposed to teach you how to feel God's presence in your life. It used stories from the Bible that were supposed to illustrate how caring and accessible God was to people like Abraham, Joseph, David, and Paul.
But is God wheelchair accessible?
No, he is actively fighting the ADA.
Wow. Savage God.
The problem is, if you don't just stick to the fuzzy parts of all these stories, it's nearly impossible to find a point at which God doesn't curse, torture, or murder someone, or unfairly bend the rules because of favoritism.
Well, all of that is just parenting 101.
You are not wrong. So the whole time I'm in this class, I'm not experiencing God in any detectable way, and I'm not getting any information I didn't already have from reading the entire stupid Bible. Now, more cracks are forming in that dam. Little water's trickling through. The people living in the river valley are getting nervous.
Wait, there's a community of people in this dam metaphor of yours? How deep does the symbolism go?
Well, just wait until we get into their government structure.
Oh, God, I'm very excited for the geopolitical climate of this.
So a year or so later, my parents decided that we'd read the Bible in a year again. Some people just don't learn. Look, it's not even a good book, Dad. It's too long, has too many names that are hard to pronounce, and ends like a Clive Barker fever dream.
Yeah, religious grandpa who definitely listens to this podcast.
He absolutely does. Not.
We get it. You're old. Moving on.
Anyway, we did it a second time, and that kind of just ruined it for me. I was getting ready to head off to college and experience life now, and I didn't have my parents standing over my shoulder forcing me to go to church. I made friends with people who just didn't give a shit about Jesus and realized that they were pretty fucking fun. Also, we had so much more to talk about when the conversation didn't have to revolve around Jesus. So when in Rome...
Make sure to visit the Trevi Fountain and don't forget to stop by the gift shop.
Yeah, something like that.
Nailed it.
So, to make a long story short,
too late.
Over a period of about 14 years, I strayed further and further from the church, at one point labeling myself an agnostic and finally landing on atheist. There was no overnight epiphany or any one defining moment for me. That's how it goes for a lot of people who were indoctrinated at a young age, had regular reinforcement throughout their childhood, and found it difficult to break free from religious thinking. I struggled with it and tried a few different churches as an adult.
Can I help you find a particular church today?
No thanks, I'm just browsing.
So actually that's funny because when families are looking for the church in their area that they're going to attend, it's called shopping.
Oh God.
Like you are shopping for a church.
Are there church salesmen? Sales assistants on the church floors.
Everyone in the church is a salesman. That's how it works.
Oh my God, our preacher is the best.
Weird.
I don't know what that was supposed to be.
I don't either.
I imagine it was some lady whose name is Margaret. And she wears a hat with like one of those little almost transparent ribbons around it that has like the little fake berries.
This is getting a little too real.
And she probably walks around with a cane. And she has like a 16-year-old son and
what?
Like a 34-year-old daughter. And she's like, I like Betty so much more than I like Charles. He's just a handful.
Wow.
She had him pretty late.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sure. All right, back to story. Even after I gave up on church altogether, I still had fears of hell and guilt over being human and doing things normal humans do. Sadly, neither you nor your little brother got the benefit from my full deconversion, since when both of you were born, I still had it in my mind that things like cutting parts off of babies' dicks were good things. But, like boob jobs and nipple piercings, that's a procedure that should require a person's informed consent, and it's lamentable that religious tradition wins out over good medicine and humanist values like bodily autonomy. That's a future episode.
To be perfectly honest, I'm pretty content not to have to deal with foreskin. Past Logan might not have appreciated it, but present Logan forgives you.
And we just turned this into another dick episode.
Ta-da!
So it is possible for people to just wake up one morning and realize religion is bullshit. But my story is a lot more in line with the common deconversion experience. Other people may have grown up in insulated religious communities and find out when they meet people from different backgrounds that their church's doctrine of demonizing others is unpalatable.
as unpalatable as you think seafood is?
No, nothing is as unpalatable as seafood.
Savage.
Other people may have been abused by people in the church, leading them to question and distance themselves from it. There's no standard template for leaving religion, and that's why it's very interesting to talk to people from all cultures and religions about their stories. Contrary to movies like God Is Not Dead, however, it's rare to see someone who became an atheist because they were mad at God.
Though it is a possibility.
I suppose so, but not believing in God and being mad at God are simply incompatible. Even attempting that would probably open a rift in time and space and destroy the universe as we know it.
Like I said, totally possible.
Oh, checks out.
Yep.
So one of the things about deconverting from religion is the sense of guilt that can accompany it. After all, you've probably been taught your whole life that there are very horrible punishments for turning your back on gods. We're not just talking about hell here. We're also talking about immediate treatment by the people you know. A lot of people going through deconversion can be shunned, disconnected, ostracized, or abused by their family and friends in the church.
In some cases, people even stop baking cookies for you.
That's the worst.
Yes, it is.
This is especially prevalent among teenagers and young adults who still rely on their families for support and find themselves in a position where simply changing their beliefs is a threat to their livelihood. That's terrifying. That's also one of the reasons shows like The Atheist Experience, Ask an Atheist, and The How-To Heretic tell people not to come out as atheist to their family unless they're sure it won't put them in danger.
For example, if your dad ever says, "If I ever found out one of my children wasn't a follower of Christ, I'd fly them out to the wilderness and airdrop them there with no supplies and see if it's God's will for them to survive," you probably shouldn't tell him you're an atheist.
Wow, that's almost like a flashback from your childhood, isn't it? It's okay, Logan. But there can also be the remnants of hellfire and damnation after you've left religion, too. It's difficult to get over that programming, especially when you still live in a culture where you're reminded daily that a loving, caring God is going to burn you forever for denying him. Sweet guy, that Jehovah.
All the girlies say he's pretty fly.
For a white guy. One of the things that helps heretics is atheist communities and gatherings where people can talk through their fears and struggles. The truth is, a lot of people have either gone through the same thing or are still dealing with it. It's a lot like drug addiction in a way, because you have to detox from all those bad ideas.
Gotta get your daily fix of God. Gotta call up your God dealers and buy a couple grams. Make sure you don't blow all of your allowance on God, though.
You might, no, it's just 10%.
You might God overdose.
A lot of people are finding solace in podcasts like ours that point out how irrelevant religion is to living a good, fulfilling life. So you can be good without God. Go figure. It complicates things when you have children and you're struggling with how to raise them. Christians are raised under the spare the rod, spoil the child doctrine that teaches the best way to make your kid behave is to beat them regularly.
Hit me again, Daddy.
Gross. Don't ever say that again.
But.
No.
But.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Corporal punishment is huge in the religious community, and it's no wonder. The Bible is one of the most violent books available. But these decisions as a parent sometimes fall prey to this religious programming as well. So, even if you hated getting whipped with a thick leather belt for everything, and your mom broke a wooden spoon over your ass once, and you vowed you'd never do that to your kids, sadly, you may end up doing it anyway. And then feel like an incredibly shitty person afterward because you've become your dad. Fucking triggered.
Yeah, I liked it better when you left the belt alone and made me hand copy the dictionary.
Right?
It made me learn things.
That's why you're so smart.
Right.
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 So my deconversion story ends with atheist activism. But most people don't end up going that route. I'm a member of American Atheists and the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and on behalf of our podcast, I contribute to a bunch of atheist podcasts to help them extend their reach. Because I think those atheist voices are important. We need more rationality and smartness in the world.
Smartness?
Smarticity?
No.
Smartitude?
Nailed it.
Whether or not anyone else agrees, this week's guest is an especially special treat. She's a loving mother, an advocate for social justice, and a victim of my podcasting passion. She's my girlfriend, Dawn. How are you doing, my darling?
How are you, my darling?
I'm good. Are you good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, since we're talking about deconversion this week, I wanted to ask you, because you and I have talked, and like me, you grew up in a church-going family, mm-hmm. but unlike me, your family didn't take it quite as seriously?
I don't think my family took it seriously at all. Like, definitely not to the level to which you grew up with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you still went to church. How did you view your family's religion early in your life?
It was just there. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and so I don't remember not being Catholic. I don't remember when my family started teaching religion or talking about religion. It was just always there. So yeah, I went to Catholic school for a few years, 4 years of Catholic school. And then I was taken out of Catholic school and put into public school and did public school religion, PSR, for a year. And then my parents decided they weren't Catholic anymore.
So in a way, they deconverted, but from what I understand, they kind of cross-pollinated.
They did, yeah. So I don't know exactly, I'm not sure exactly how long my parents were Catholic. I'm the middle of five kids. And so my two older sisters went through Catholic grade school all the way up through eighth grade. And then my oldest sister went almost all the way through high school in Catholic school.
Oh.
So they were, you know, they were older when my parents chose to not be Catholic anymore, and then switched over to religious science, which was bizarre.
Just okay.
Completely bizarre. They were, yeah, that was when we started begging our parents, like, please let us go to Catholic church. Let's go to the normal place. This is so weird.
So before we get to that,
yeah,
let's back up to being a Catholic child. Mm-hmm. What do you remember being, growing up in the Catholic church being like?
That's just what I knew. Like, we went to mass on Sunday. We didn't get the whole, like, you get to go to church. We were like, oh, do we have to? And yes, you have to go. So we would go to church on Sunday. And I remember sitting in church being bored out of my mind while somebody talked and having my parents lean over and be like, oh my gosh, there's Father Mike again giving his homily about sports. No one cares, you know. But probably what I remember the most is going to Catholic school. And I don't remember a lot of it, obviously. I was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
But second grade, I remember Sister Teresa was my teacher.
Okay.
And I started getting in trouble.
Doesn't that just seem like an incredibly stereotypical sister name? Like Teresa.
Well, I mean, we had some.
Did you have a Mary?
No,
Maria?
I don't think so. No, we had a Rosario.
Rosario?
Yeah, she was the head of the school.
Ooh,
she
la
might
la.
Still be alive. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. She was old then, but I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, so I remember going to church in second grade because that's when we had to start doing confession.
Oh.
And in preparation to be able to get our first communion.
Okay.
And we had to start reading, taking our turns reading in church because during the week we went to mass as part of school. I don't think we went every day, maybe once or twice a week. But yeah, that's when I started getting in trouble because I would talk or like look around or, you know, do what kids do when they're bored.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I got in trouble and would get my hand slapped with rulers and have to stand and face the corner once we got back to class. But then the funny thing was Sister Teresa was taking guitar lessons from my mom. And so she would feel bad about it and keep me after school and give me chocolate so I wouldn't tell my mom that she hit my hand with a ruler.
Oh,
so.
Nothing like a little Christian bribery,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. I mean, chocolate. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. What second grader doesn't want chocolate?
So the whole getting your knuckles smacked with a ruler, mm-hmm. like that just, it sounds like it's just a joke that somebody made up mm-hmm. because nuns are mean or whatever, mm-hmm. but like that's an actual real thing that they do.
It was back then. I mean, I don't think it's allowed now. I don't know, but yeah, it was a for real thing that happened. You'd have to hold your hands out and then wait for it.
So, yeah. Oh, so it was like an anticipation thing even.
Yeah, and they did it in front of the whole class. Like, you just stand up in front of the class, hold your hands out, and wait for them to smack your knuckles with the ruler.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. So, did you get corporal punishment at home from your parents as well?
Oh, yeah. So, there were five of us, and when we got in trouble, it was like, if one person got in trouble, we were all in trouble, usually. And so, we'd have to line up. And so, being the middle kid, it sucked no matter what, because...
Because you could
see... Because
you
had to watch someone get it either way.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, in some ways, it was kind of nice because whether they went oldest to youngest or youngest to oldest, that's how they always lined us up by age. By the time that it got to me, I was already crying.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe my dad took it easier on me because it was always my dad.
Oh, okay.
But I kind of feel like maybe he took it easier on me. But it's still, yeah. We had to line up for the belt. It was lots of fun.
So one of the things that I remember from... receiving corporal punishment mm-hmm. as a child was that we actually liked when our dad spanked us more. Like, we didn't like it. It wasn't fun.
Okay.
But we liked it when he did it because he would, like, hit us square on the butt and, like, get it over with. And, you know, that was that. But my mom had horrible, horrible aim. She had... such horrible aim. And so anytime that my dad wasn't around, we would always try and, like, get a deferment. Like, is it okay if dad punishes me? Like, when he gets home, can I just go to my room and think about what I did?
Isn't that what happened? Like, yeah, ours was wait until your dad comes home. It was, mom didn't do that. Dad took care of that.
Oh, well, yeah. See, for us, it just kind of depended on, okay. like, how urgently the punishment was, quote, needed.
Okay.
And so, yeah, if my mom was the only one there, then my mom would take care of it.
Oh.
But, oh, man, you would get smacked across the back of your knees and, like, the lower back and just, like, everywhere except your butt. And it
yeah.
was like, oh, no, don't do that. Yeah, it was pretty terrible.
Okay.
So you mentioned you went to PSR.
Mm-hmm.
After you got out of Catholic school, mm-hmm. you went to public school.
Yeah.
But you weren't quite done with getting... religious education.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that my parent part of the reason why my parents took us out of Catholic school was because it was expensive,
mm-hmm.
and there were five of us that were all going to be in school or all
okay.
were in school, but it was still important for them to them for us to continue our Christian upbringing, I suppose. So we did PSR, which is public school religion. So that was like one night a week we would go to the Catholic school where we were going to school, and they had a class where they taught kids who went to public school the things that they needed to know about the religion. I couldn't tell you what any of those things are.
Okay, but it was specific to, like, learning about Catholicism.
It was specific about Catholicism, yes.
So
it wasn't anything about science or math.
Right.
It was specific to religion, yes.
But that actually leads me into my next question, because when you did go to Catholic school
mm-hmm.
before you went to public school, mm-hmm. did you notice or can you remember any, like, glaring inconsistencies in, like, the way that science or math or history were taught?
No, I don't really remember much about that. I think my favorite thing I remember about that was that we had to do a presentation about science.
Okay.
I have no idea what my topic was.
Okay.
But one of the boys in my class did a presentation on Voltron, and I thought it was so freaking cool
nice.
That he was talking about Voltron for a science presentation in our Catholic school.
So did he have, like, equations and physics to, like, back up what he was talking about?
It was third grade, so no. It was more about, like, planets and space exploration, and it was freaking Voltron.
Okay. I just wondered if he had, like, you know, physics of lions transforming into robots and what it would take, what kind of energy it would take to produce a magical force sword.
No, but, you know, maybe if I sent him a message today on Facebook, he would tell me.
That would be pretty cool.
I mean, he's still kind of the same guy. So,
you know,
he might still be into all of that.
Well, we certainly respect nerds around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you had to, during high school, kind of take care of yourself at a certain point.
Yeah, it started before high school.
Before high school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
I mean, I guess define take care of myself, because, yeah. So, my parents, when they left the Catholic Church, we went to the Church of Religious Science, which was weird. It was all about metaphysical and how everyone's connected, and there was a lot of meditation. And so we went there, I don't know, for a year, I'm guessing. And so I was in fifth grade, I guess, when that started.
Oh, okay.
So maybe it was a little bit longer than that. But when I was in seventh grade, my parents got divorced. And we lived with my dad. And my dad, shortly after that, lost his job. And so then he kind of went into a hole, went into a depression. And it was just me and my younger siblings at home. So, yeah, I had to step in and kind of be a grown-up at 13 and make sure that they ate and they did their homework and they went to bed on time and they got to school and all of those things. So I had to be a grown up pretty young.
Okay. But during this time, during the divorce and, you know, all of this that's going on, is religion still playing a role in your family at all?
No, no. So, and it's weird because I feel like I'm kind of jumping all over the place here, but my parents at one point were really into church. Like my mom was a Christian folk singer and actually did several albums.
Ooh, yeah. Are those available on Amazon or Spotify?
I mean, part of me kind of wants to know that, but I've never looked.
Right? That would be funny. Okay.
It'd be pretty hilarious. But so, yeah. So my mom was very involved in the church and in the band and all of that. And it kind of waned off. And when we went to the Church of Religious Science, she got involved a little bit with the music there, not much, but then it just seemed to kind of drop off.
Okay.
And so I feel like when my parents got divorced, my dad just, I don't know if he ever bought any of that crap. It just wasn't a thing anymore. Nobody tried to make us go. I mean, we celebrated the religious holidays that I still celebrate.
Right, but they mostly just cultural.
I mean, we didn't have to give something up for Lent anymore. We didn't do any of those things.
Okay. So, ooh, actually, speaking of Lent, we're kind of backing up again, into your Catholicism. Yeah. So, did you do the whole Ash Wednesday?
Yes.
And, like, you had, like, smudgy fingerprints on your forehead?
Yeah, I went to Catholic school. I had to.
Oh.
It was required. We went on Ash Wednesday.
Okay. So, when you had to give up something for Lent, mm-hmm. did you, like, give up lima beans?
I tried to. Or, I mean, I was usually forced to give up something that I actually liked, but I would try to pick something that it wasn't like I had access to anyway, like chocolate. Like, who doesn't love chocolate, right? But
crazy people.
I know, right? But what third grader has chocolate all the time?
Well, some do when their dad has a big sweet tooth.
I was not allowed to get in my dad's snacks. That was a punishable offense.
Dang.
Do not touch dad's snacks.
Okay. That's harsh.
Lent or not.
All right.
But no, like I would give up something like chocolate or, you know, something that I liked, but that it's not like I was going to have it every day anyway.
Okay. That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
It's pretty crafty.
A pretty smart kid.
Yeah.
You're
still pretty smart, yeah. Cookie. So then your family kind of fell out of religion. And so it wasn't really important to anyone in the family, or were any of your siblings still kind of into it?
I think growing up, no one was really into it anymore.
Okay.
It wasn't, I don't know, it just wasn't a thing. We didn't go to church. We didn't participate in any church events, minus one. So, no, I think the only really interaction we had with any church that I can think of between my parents getting divorced and then being an adult was that, so my dad, when my parents got divorced, my dad lost his job and had three kids at home and no money coming in. And so somehow a local church, not the one that we even had belonged to at one point, found out about that. And they reached out to us and brought us like boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of food.
Okay.
And then invited us kids up at Christmas time for a dinner, and they gave us each a gift. And so that's something that year in particular, had that church not reached out to us, we would not have had Christmas.
Okay.
So that was the only thing I can think of, the only time I remember going to a church.
Okay.
During that time frame.
But that sounds like it was a really positive experience, because what you would expect for churches to do just because of you know, their nature and who they say they are and who they worship, is that they would do outreach like that, and they would, you know, give things with no real expectation of anything in return. So you weren't at that time, like, the church wasn't trying to fold you into the flock or like try and guilt you into attending.
No, that wasn't my experience at all with that. And honestly, that it was a really big moment in my life for me.
Uh-huh.
Not from a religious perspective, but I mean, you know, it's something that I really enjoy doing every year, is trying to help someone else experience what I experienced, help them feel good when they're probably in a really bad place in life.
So it was somewhat formative.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's one of my favorite things to do every year, is to help a family enjoy Christmas. And not because of Jesus, but just because,
right.
Because I think that no kid should have to give up their innocence or feel like, or learn that there's no Santa Claus at a little age. And that I feel like they shouldn't have to understand how hard the world is and how cruel the world can be when they still have that innocence. I like to let them keep that.
Right. Well, and I think that one of the things that happens when kids are subjected to that, particularly at a young age, is that they kind of internalize that and wonder, like, if their parents are struggling because of them, or, you know, and mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand, like, you definitely wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Plus, it makes you feel good, but it's not so much a sense of reward as it is just knowing that you can make someone's day a little bit better. You can, you know, make somebody not have to carry around those worries with them for at least the holiday season.
Yeah, I mean, so think about that time. So, I mean, people probably don't know this. So you and I used to work together. And one of the things that I enjoyed that we always did every year at that company was to adopt a family for Christmas. And
right.
So there were a couple of years that you and I were on the same team and did that together. And so the first year we did it, we had a pretty big family. And we got every single thing on their list.
Right.
And we had two carloads of things to go out there. And not like a little car, like two SUV size loads of things to bring out there. And we were just, as a group, so excited to do this for them, because we're like, this is amazing. This is like the coolest thing. Like, I'm tearing up thinking about this. And so our COO made the delivery out to the shelter where the families lived, and we don't get to meet them, and she doesn't get to meet them. It's 100% anonymous. But when she made the second trip out there the next day, the woman who ran the shelter let her know, she's like, this mother is just beside herself with the generosity here, and it's just amazing. And so, I don't know, that's just one of my favorite things to do, but it has absolutely nothing to do with religion. It's just about helping someone else and knowing that, when life is hard for you, there's someone else out there that you don't even know who's willing to help you out and make it easier.
That was beautiful. And those kinds of things are consistent with a secular humanist stance.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
We take care of each other. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, praying isn't going to accomplish anything.
Right.
You're not going to, you know, send thoughts and prayers to somebody and improve their situation. So you have to take it upon yourself to make these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that you would now consider yourself a secular humanist? Have you given it much thought? Because I know that the whole, you know, atheism scene and you know, kind of fighting religion or whatever hasn't really been your bag.
Yeah.
But knowing what you know about what secular humanism is, would you say that that's something that you subscribe to now?
Yes. If I understand secular humanism correctly, then yeah, I would say I understand it to be someone who is not affiliated with a religion, who just cares about other people and their well-being.
Right.
So, yeah, that's me. Like,
okay.
I don't care if someone else has religious beliefs. it doesn't matter to me mm-hmm. as long as they're not imposing them on me.
Well,
I have no problem
yeah.
with that. You can believe what you want to believe as long as you're not imposing it on everyone else.
Right.
But yeah, I care about doing the right things for other people.
Okay. That's why I think you're such a good person.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I wanted to ask you, but I think that it kind of doesn't pertain quite as much because mm-hmm. you and I have talked and you know my strict religious upbringing. Uh-huh. And so...
Yeah, I can't believe people actually grew up like that. Like I said, your experience with religion is so different than mine. And from the people that I know who are religious, I mean, where we live, it's a very Catholic town. But most of the Catholics that I know, I mean, they're not as lax as my family was. But it's like they might go to church on Sunday, but they're not like... diehard Bible thumpers, like you have to follow every single rule that's in this book. Like that's just not the people that I've experienced.
Every rule except for the ones that you don't like.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But everybody else has to follow those rules, just you don't.
Right. Yeah.
Then in that case, since you were never really deeply ingrained in religion mm-hmm. and can't even identify with my childhood.
I didn't even know that was real.
Yeah. Then you never had any kind of guilt or fear of like eternal damnation if you just, you know, if you didn't keep believing in God or anything like that, right?
I mean, we learned about hell.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was not about not believing in God. I think I remember being taught that if I did bad things and I didn't confess, then I would have eternal damnation in hell.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember ever being told, like, if you don't believe in God, you're going to hell.
Okay.
So, no, I never had that fear. But, you know, I grew up believing that there was a God. And I did believe that there was a God for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't with a fear that if I didn't believe in him, that I would go to hell. It was just that I thought there had to be a God.
Okay. Did you ever at any point feel like you could experience or communicate with God? I mean, did you ever pray and actually think that someone was listening?
Yeah, when I prayed, I thought someone was listening. why else do you pray, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we had to say our prayers at night when we went to bed, and it was formulaic, just like our meal, or our prayer we said before our meals, but... You know, we had to say our prayers before we went to bed, but then I would have my own thoughts. I didn't have to say them out loud, but I would have my own thoughts where I thought I was praying to a God.
Okay.
And that God could hear these thoughts that I had.
Okay. So in that case, when you started to kind of fall out of those beliefs, was there any sense of losing a friend for like... you know, kind of lack of a better way to phrase it. Like when I was very Christian, I thought that I had a relationship with Jesus Christ. Like I felt like when I was in church, like I could feel the Holy Spirit, you know, that kind of thing. And so when I started to kind of fall out of that, it was sort of, I don't want to say painful, but it felt like a separation.
I think for me, it was, I mean, I remember praying every night as a kid, and then I didn't for a long time. Like, I don't remember praying as a teenager most of the time.
Okay.
But then I did, you know, I did periodically pray thinking, you know, it was usually when life was hard.
Yeah.
Then I would pray thinking, okay, maybe this is what I need to do, is I need to just pray about it and hopefully my prayers will be answered. And I think it wasn't that I had a separation, it was that I got angry that nothing ever fucking happened.
Yeah.
And life kept being fucking hard and getting worse and worse and worse, and that people were assholes, and that why did I keep getting shit on? How do so many bad things keep happening to one person? And then I was just like, you know what, this is just really stupid. And so I questioned for a long time, just, is there can't be a God. There can't be. Like, what have I done so wrong in my life that God fucking hates me so much that I would be through so many hard things?
Like, right.
I don't need to get into all the details, but I've been through a lot of hard things. And so, yeah, I think there were a couple of things that really, I guess, kind of sealed it for me.
Okay.
First, I went to a Catholic college, which was not on purpose. I didn't realize it was Catholic.
Right.
I went there as an adult because they offered an accelerated program because I've worked a full-time job since I was 16 and started this program thinking, okay, well, I can still work and I can get done with school without it taking me 45 years to get done. I realized it was a Catholic school. And so one of my requirements in order to earn my degree was to take religion, which I absolutely didn't want to do. I wanted zero part of it.
Right.
Because I just was like, no, why are you forcing me to take religion? I don't want some stupid priest teaching me about something. And it's all going to be from their perspective. It's going to be really biased.
Right.
So I put it off until the very end of my degree program. I was hoping that I kind of could just sneak by without it.
Maybe they would forget about it.
I was like, yeah, okay, I'm done, right? And then I'm like, oh, no, religion. And I'm like, God damn. So anyway, it was a class that I really didn't want to take. And I ended up taking it through an online university. And it was fascinating. I loved it. I loved the anonymity of it because I could ask my stupid questions that were just completely ignorant because I had no exposure to any other religion ever. Like, I had friends that were Jewish, but it's not like I asked them, like, what does it mean to be a Jew other than you don't believe in Jesus? Like,
right.
I don't freaking know.
Well, and growing up in, you know, the American Midwest,
yeah,
that's pretty
everyone
much
is Catholic here.
Right.
Everyone.
Right.
I mean, there are some Jews, but like I said, it's not like we asked them. But I also learned about Islam and the different sects of Christianity and about Judaism. And in that class, I was just like, why are all these people so fucking crazy? Like, it's all the same shit. All
right.
Of it. It's all the same. But it fascinated me. And so then I took another class that talked about Eastern religions. And I was like, well, shit, that's all the same, too. I mean, minus this Jesus guy. It's all the same. But everybody believes in all this shit. And it really all stems from these stupid fairy tales that
right.
they told way back when they didn't know what lightning was, you know? Like,
right.
So I think that that was part of it. And part of me really going, okay. At that point, I think I was agnostic.
Okay.
I would say, like, I didn't subscribe to any particular religion. I found it fascinating talking to people that did follow other faiths. Like, there was a lady that worked at the video store who was Hindu, and she was fascinating.
Okay.
And I loved learning about just her perspective of life and her philosophies, and she had her own struggles with religion. But anyway, she was fascinating, but I think that was part of it. But then also, I have gone through my own struggles, and what really kind of turned the page for me with religion was I went through fertility treatments for
okay.
a couple of years, and which was very difficult. And I tried praying again, and nothing.
Okay.
Didn't. And that I then chose to adopt. And at that point, you have to do a home study. You have to prove your worthiness to adopt a child.
Right.
So one of the things that they ask you about is your religion. And I'm like, you know, I'm just not. But they kind of force you into a box of, well, what would you say that you are?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm not really anything. And but
well,
you have
right,
to put
right,
something.
But
you have to put something.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, at that point I was like, well, I mean, I guess I'm spiritual. Like, I don't subscribe to a religion. I don't go to any church. I don't follow any of the teachings. I think it's important for a child to understand what other people believe. And so I think it's important to understand other religions. I just don't subscribe to any of them.
Right.
Whatever you want to call that. And so they're like, so spiritual? I'm like, yeah, sure. That's fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mark that down for
yeah.
me.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was just really through the infertility process and all of the struggles that go with that, as well as the adoption process that is the hardest thing I've ever done, that really made me realize that there just isn't a God. There
right.
just isn't.
Or if there is a God, then it must either be sort of a deistic, don't give a crap kind of God.
Or at least he just doesn't give a crap about me.
Or maybe he just doesn't give a crap about you. That's
yeah.
awful. We're all God's children except for Dawn.
Except for me. Yeah.
Aw. Yeah. That's terrible.
I mean, I'm a middle kid. Come on, no one loves me anyway.
Oh, I know what it's like to
right,
be a middle
yeah,
kid.
Yeah.
So I think that middle kids need to just unite.
I think
that's,
so.
We come together.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think maybe there's a natural gravity.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my long-winded answer.
No, that was a good answer. I like hearing your experience. So your family and you mm-hmm. just kind of like were meh about religion for
yes.
the longest time.
Yeah.
But not all of your family members nowadays are meh about religion. So do you ever find yourself at odds with some of their views or some of their, you know, because a lot of times religion and politics kind of just naturally merge into one another.
Yeah.
So do you find that your family's politics, maybe guided by religion, are at odds and cause conflict?
I feel like an alien in my family.
Okay.
I think I have one sibling who is very liberal, like I am. In fact, she's not allowed to vote anything other than Democrat. that's what her husband tells her. That's a joke. But she's very liberal and very open-minded, like I am. And the rest of my family is very conservative. I have a sister who is a practicing Lutheran and is very, I mean, she's a regular churchgoer. They go, she and her family go every week.
Okay.
We very much are at odds on our beliefs, because she's the whole like it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve camp, and I'm like, oh, that's not even in the Bible. and yeah, they're very conservative in their views, and then I have my mom, who's like right wing conservative theory crazy.
Alex Jones.
She actually does listen to Alex Jones,
blah.
Which I discovered when she stayed with me during my neck surgery. it was not fun. It was the longest 4 days of my life. But for her, like, my mom's a hypocrite. I mean, that's a nice way for me to put it.
Yes.
She has not practiced religion since my parents separated when I was 13 years old. And I'm, well, it's been a long time.
Well, you're 28.
Again.
You're
yes,
28.
Again.
Still.
Still. And holding. So it's been a very long time. And in fact, like sitting through my Lutheran niece and nephew's baptisms, my mom is the one leaning over to me like, when are we going to get the fuck out of here? I'm just going to go smoke. She lied. She said this wasn't a mass. Like, that's my mom, right? But you look at her Facebook page and it's all about Jesus and why all the brown people are so terrible and that everyone should have guns and all these horrible, horrible things. But then, you know, the next thing is that she's out with her gays. And she keeps telling me, like, I just want my gay so that he can just make me fabulous. But then they should all basically burn in hell because they're terrible people. So I feel like an alien around my family. And we just can't talk about those things because, A, there's no way I'll ever get through to them. It's pointless.
Right.
It's pointless. But B, all it does is make us angry. And so, you know, I just have limited time with them.
Right.
Except the ones that I get along with.
Well, and it seems like, especially in families, if you're going to have points of contention, they're going to be like over how you raise your kids or financial decisions that you've made or religion. And that always just seems really odd to me. But, you know, those kinds of conflicts, because people identify with their religion so strongly, even if they kind of don't have a religion, but they, I don't even know how that works. But
yeah,
but I
don't know. I often wonder how I ever came out of the same family as the rest of my family, because I don't have anything in common with them.
I know how you feel.
Yeah, I don't get it.
And I guess that's maybe my final question, since we're still talking about family, is when it comes to your son and raising him, you would, on a philosophical and academic level, you would really want for him to be exposed to and understand the ideas behind different world religions and like what the history is and why people believe these things. Yeah. And then allow him, like, I guess my question is, would you ever nudge him toward a certain way of thinking, or would you just kind of stand back and watch him make up his own mind all on his own?
I nudge him toward thinking about facts and reason and science, because that's what you should be thinking about.
You're so smart.
I highly encourage that. I do want him to understand how other people think. I want him to understand the foundation of the different beliefs. And I do want him to make his own choice. And I've always felt that way. That, well, even that was part of my home study too. That I want to present him with information about different belief systems and let him make his own choice, whether that he's an atheist, whether that he's a Christian, whether that he's a Muslim. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
What matters to me is that he's happy and that he is educated and that he is empathetic and that he's a good person. Yeah. Whatever it is that he chooses to do. But I mean, he's 7 right now, so he doesn't know anything other than God and Death God, which I still don't know where that came from, and that he thinks a guy built the city because someone, I don't know who because it wasn't me, but someone told him that someone built the whole world, so he thinks a guy built the city. One guy.
Yeah, who's that guy?
Yeah,
it's he like thinks Bob
his
the Builder.
Name might be God, but he's not sure because that's confusing with God and his brother Death God.
Yes.
You hang out in space and come visit him at school.
Yes. And here's where we need to remind everybody that, what was it, episode 2 or 3?
Oh gosh, it was early on in the
It
podcast.
Was pretty early on.
Yeah.
So yeah, Dawn's son actually made an appearance on the podcast early on.
It was fascinating.
And we got to learn all about God and Death God.
Yeah,
it was
one
great.
Of them has like a body full of laser beams.
Yeah.
And the other one, I can't remember. One of them's blue.
One of them shoots lasers out of their eyes.
Oh, and the other one shoots it out of his whole body.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like 19 and 16. They're really old.
They're really old.
And they hang out in space and watch TV, but when they get bored, they go to the elementary school to hang out.
Man, I hope I never turn 19.
I
that
know,
would be
right?
ridiculous. All right. So, last question. Mm-hmm. Are you going to do a podcast with me?
What podcast?
Since we have all of this free time on our hands, are we going to start up our own podcast?
Are we talking about? I don't know.
All right.
We'll see.
All right.
We could just make one going, or sweaty balls.
Sweaty balls.
I feel like I was a terrible guest for deconversion because I'm a horrible religious person anyway. Like, obviously, I wasn't steeped in it like you were.
You are so going to hell.
I know. All of my friends will be there. It's fine. I'm driving the bus there. I'll have warm beer, but it'll be okay. I'll have good company.
But I thought it was like strippers and beer volcanoes.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, but the volcanoes are warm. Warm beer. I mean, it's not great, but, you know, I learned to drink beer in the first place, so I'm sure I could learn to drink it warm.
Okay. Well,
and hang out with my friends, who are all horrible people just like me.
Fine. And by horrible, we mean fun.
It's okay. We'll be burning in hell together, though.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, I think that you have been a fantastic interview. And even if you didn't have some crazy, crazy deconversion experience,
I really didn't.
It's actually been very interesting to talk about your background with religion because everybody's experience is different. So thank you
even
for sharing.
Weird?
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
Do you want to hear something funny?
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, I mean, you'll remember this probably. Other people probably won't remember this.
Okay, listeners, listen up.
You have to be at least 26 years old. So when I went to the Church of Religious Science,
yes.
We didn't want to go to the youth group because those kids were weird. So, but we also didn't want to sit through the service. So it was kind of like, oh, crap, what do we do, right? So anyway, one of the first times that we went, my older sister was sitting next to me and we were watching the preacher, well, I don't know, whatever they called him, giving his sermon, and he looked like the guy from the Energizer commercials back in the 80s. Do you remember that guy?
Yeah, the Australian guy?
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes. And so my sister used to lean over to me during the service and she'd go, oi! We would try not to laugh. But I couldn't look at the guy without going, oi! That's all I got.
I like it.
Yeah?
Oi! That's a good note to close on.
Yeah.
Thank you, my darling.
Thank you, my darling. Sorry, I sucked.
Hey. I'm not sorry.
sweaty balls.
Mario Kart 8!
What are you buying?
Nobody exists on purpose. Nobody belongs anywhere. Everybody's gonna die. Come watch TV.
Teach me.
No.
And welcome back, ladies and germs. We're in this part of the show now.
We includes me.
Yeah, I guess, unfortunately. If it were up to me, it would just be another copy of me.
Okay.
Logan so Squared.
Here's the thing. We have been called clones so many times, it practically is two of you.
Yeah, except that you're a big grumpy sourpuss who doesn't like any of the things that I like.
Get off my lawn.
All right. So anyway, let's dive into the mud and get our hands clean. This week, this week we're talking about something that is kind of interesting to me and potentially super controversial.
Really?
Yeah, this week we're talking about the show Friends.
So what even is... Wait, I know what Friends is.
So no one told you life was gonna be this way. So, yeah, so Friends is a show that is beloved by many people, specifically in your generation and probably the generation before yours. And depending on how old they were when the show was running, potentially people my age as well.
So basically everyone is able to love Friends.
Well, no.
Or hate Friends. Everyone can hate Friends.
I mean, everybody can feel however they want to feel about Friends. But the part that becomes controversial is this new generation of people, which I don't know what they're called.
Generation Z? X? Z?
I think there's Z.
Oh, yeah. X is already gone. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think there's Z. So, Generation Z is now starting to watch Friends because Friends just recently got ported over to Netflix. And so now everybody can watch it.
Ported?
Fuck, shut up.
Licensed?
Semantics, bro.
Okay.
So, yeah. So now all of the Gen Zers are watching Friends, and they are apparently super, super butthurt because the show, as they perceive it, is extremely homophobic and sexist.
I could see where that's not wrong.
And here's where I start to feel sort of conflicted, because I obviously do not support any sort of bigotry in any fashion whatsoever.
Right.
And I think that there are quite a few things in our current society that need to be rectified. And I am, like, one of the first people to point out when people are making incredibly sexist or, like, bigoted remarks.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel like this is a weird circumstance because... And the most common argument for the pro-Friends side of this debate is it was a different time, which, yes, when the show was running, it was a different time in the sense that nobody really gave a shit about homophobia because everybody was still sort of bigoted in general, but also it wasn't even really that big of a culture shift at that point. So I feel like kind of, yes, the time was different, but at the same time, that doesn't really affect the content of the show now.
Well, I mean, it just, like, does.
Just because it was produced in a different time doesn't mean that it holds any lesser significance than it anything else that was produced today.
Well, I mean,
I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
If you go back and you look at classic works of literature that are still circulating, like Mark Twain, for example, I mean, that stuff has been up for book banning. It's been, you know, very controversial in the past, even back to when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like, there were some times where, or, you know, some people who were like, this is just not okay.
Yeah.
But that literature exists. It's not like you can just, well, first of all, you can not read it.
Yeah.
And with a show like Friends, you can not watch it.
Yeah.
And this isn't a whole, like, I'm not making the argument that, oh, well, if you don't like my prayers in school, then you can just plug your ears. Like, that's not where I'm going with that. But I guess what I'm saying is, because it is an old show, it was something that happened. People know about it. They either liked it or they didn't, and certainly are entitled to have their opinions on it. It's over. Like, it's not affecting our culture
Yeah.
these days. And it's sort of like a time capsule, if you want to look at it that way, like, oh, well, it was made back in the, you know, 90s when, you know, making jokes like, oh, that's so gay or whatever. Well, we're like,
all right, so let me pause you there, because that's actually where my second train of thought was going to go.
Okay.
Or the second station that my train of thought is stopping at. Is
derailing?
I don't fucking know, man. So I have just recently started watching through Friends, because I haven't ever actually watched through the entire series before. And now that it's on Netflix, I'm like, OP, I'll watch it. And so I started it. And watching through, I think I'm probably 4 seasons deep now. And I can kind of see where the argument would be made that some of the jokes that are being made, or like some of the show's overall themes, would be homophobic in a sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's also kind of a really strong approach to looking at it. Because I feel like one of the main things that people always bring up is like how often Ross talks about his wife being a lesbian. And, like, the jokes that are, or ex-wife being a lesbian.
Oh, okay.
And, like, all of the jokes that are surrounding that, like.
But it's, okay, so my impression of that, because I've watched Friends, not, like, one of my favorite shows, but I've watched it before.
Yeah.
And my impression of that is more, like, self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
Almost, and I guess instead of saying it's homophobic, maybe you could say that it's kind of exhibiting, like, toxic masculinity. Like, he's not good enough, she needed a woman, like he wasn't a good man, he wasn't man enough, or something like that. So I feel like in that specific instance it's kind of self-deprecating, but in others, like, you know, every once in a while you would get the whole like somebody walks in on somebody naked and then they wonder if they're gay, or like, you know, something stupid like that, like those tropes, and those are not okay, you know, but it's kind of a commentary on that character and their views, rather than really like making some broad statement that that's okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm like, I wish that I had an example so that I wasn't just making a blanket statement, but I feel like there are definitely pieces of work that are published and produced nowadays that still kind of carry those sorts of themes and elements in them.
Yes, they do.
And I feel like this is just a weird thing for people to be getting up in arms about, like specifically this versus like anything else that's out there right now, because like there are any number of shows that are like prominent gay jokes all the time, and it's like, why wouldn't you be more mad about the things that are being produced today and presenting those sorts of elements, as opposed to things that were produced like 15 years ago presenting those sorts of elements.
Right. And I would agree with that. If there were, like, let's say that Friends was a show that was on today. It was running first run, and they started making those kinds of jokes and those kinds of references and that sort of just attitude toward things that we value as, you know, advocates for social justice, then that would not be a show that I would watch.
Yeah.
And I would probably be like, look, everybody that I know, this is what I'm noticing with this show, and probably you don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
And that's one thing, like something that is just done and over with. There's, I mean, Friends, it's recorded just like Mark Twain is printed.
Yeah.
You know, those things exist. And at this point, if you don't want to experience those views and you don't want to, you know, propagate those, then I think that you need to just like not watch them. You can also, you know, like contact Netflix and be like, hey, these are the kind of views that this show has. It'd be better if like it wasn't on your service. But they're also, you know, somebody like Netflix, unless it's really super blatant, they're serving a very broad audience, and with a show like Friends they would be like, eh, we heard you, but go fuck off.
I think that my perception of Friends at this point is kind of like a grandparent that is still somewhat conservative. Like every once in a while they say something that just makes you cringe super hard, but for the most part they're just like, eh, it's just my goofy old grandpa who says some things that are not great.
Yeah. And you try to correct them, but you can't just ban them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Some grandpas should be banned. But it's not like you could just do that.
That's fair. All right. Well, that's pretty much the extent that I had for this. I think that I understand where people are coming from, especially when it's like the whole advocacy thing. I get it. And there are certain things that definitely need to have firepower put into them in terms of like putting an end to the horrors that they're causing. But I feel like Friends probably isn't one of those things because it's just like a ancient show that like people just kind of revel as a nostalgia thing. I don't know what word I was looking for there, but yeah, I think that the grandpa metaphor is a good example here. Friends is just a slightly racist old grandpa, although not racist so much as mildly homophobic.
Oh, okay.
And or sexist.
Yeah, pretty sexist. I mean, look, so there is no denying that some of the topics and the attitudes portrayed in all kinds of shows, even ones that are on today, which I wouldn't watch because I just don't like to deal with that kind of attitude.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that it exists.
Yeah.
Like, you can, you know, ask for it to not be a thing. I think that what's really important, though, instead of, like, talking about Friends or, you know, old movies, like when we were watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
yeah,
Casey Jones was an incredibly sexist and terrible character. And when I was watching it, I was like, holy shit. But, I mean, the movie was made in 1990. It's like had its run in theaters. Those actors have like maybe they get residuals, probably not. Like that yeah. movie is so damn old and like no one even cares about it anymore. But
well,
like,
even if they do, like I don't know. I don't know if it's really on the actor to like absorb the punishment for that sort of thing. Because like as an actor, I guess you can consciously make the decision not to play a character. But I feel like at the end of the day, the character that you're portraying is really kind of on the writers of whatever it is that you're acting in and or like directors or producers.
Yeah, I would say that the main blame for anything in a TV show or movie goes to the writers first and then everybody else can get the trickle down effect.
Yeah. Anyway, I know what you're saying. And I think that a lot of people don't like that argument because they're like, oh, it doesn't matter if it was made in the 90s. We still shouldn't be like perpetuating it in today's society. But I don't know. I don't fully agree with that. I think that you and I are kind of on the same wavelength at that point. Like it happened. And if you, again, if you don't like it, then you can just kind of ignore it. And you can try to get it removed from society, but it's probably not going to be a good idea or not possible. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, I think that it's important to when you encounter things like this and you know that this content is being consumed by people, like people that are watching horrible, horrible YouTubers.
Yeah.
Like you can report the YouTuber and all of that, but like First Amendment and like YouTube policies, as long as they're not violating it, they can spew some pretty crappy, horrible shit.
Yeah.
And at that point, you just have to attack the views and the arguments that are being made and try and sway people's opinions. And that's definitely not easy, but
yeah,
it's not like you can just ban all speech that you don't like.
Fair.
Kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you had to rate this controversy on a scale of moon landing hoaxes.
To grab her by the pussy.
What?
I don't know. That's another controversy.
Yeah. I don't really like that one.
All right.
I don't like to be reminded of that.
Fair enough. I retract it.
So if you had to rate this controversy on a scale of moon landing hoax to flat earth.
Oh, God.
What would you rate it?
I don't like the scale. It's not even on the scale. I'm going to put it in a box somewhere else and just store it to the side with a label that says sexist grandpa on it.
Okay. So basically you're rating it one sexist grandpa.
Yeah. One sexist grandpa.
Okay. Nice. Now that we've walked away from our religion, we're walking away from this episode. But we're not deconverting, so we'll be back next week. For now, I want to thank our amazing patrons, Gaytheist, Lisa McLean, Holly Vane, the Sarah Talk Podcast, the Dumb All Over Podcast, and Brothel Night. Until next week, if you want to troll us or pat us on the back, please send us an email to podcast@waywardwillis.com. Also, please keep those iTunes reviews coming. We love those things. Intro music was provided by Austin Cologne and used with permission. You can find more of Austin's music linked in the show notes. This podcast is a media production of Willisware LLC. All rights reserved.
This has been The Wayward Willis. If you liked what you just heard and you want more of John and Logan, you can follow us on Twitter at Wayward Willis, Facebook at facebook.com/TheWaywardWillis, or at willisweb.com. If you want to help the show and have a few extra dollars, you can donate per episode or per month on Patreon at patreon.com/wayward. We'll be back next week.